Hi, welcome to Screening Room with Chet and Dee. I'm Chet.
And I'm Dee.
I'm a boomer.
And I'm a millennial. And we both love classic movies.
And we think you're going to love them too if you give them a shot.
Which is where we come in.
We're here to talk about those old movies. We tell you why we think they're so good, and we give you a little background about how they were made.
And we'll also talk about what those movies can teach us about history, about people.
And maybe even about the meaning of life. Good movies try to do that.
And that's why we want you to watch them. But before we get into this very shocking movie choice for the holiday edition of Screening Room with Chet and Dee,
a real switcheroo,
we should talk about our sponsor, non-sponsor, This Old Cat House.
This Old Cat House.
They foster neonatal kittens,
raise them from bottle babies,
bottle feeding them, every few hours.
And but it's a now, special week. It's a special week.
Special week. Ruth, Beatty, and Ginsey are going to get fixed.
They're going to get
adopted.
Yeah.
They're gonna have a home for the holidays. Isn't that great news?
That's great news.
Doesn't that make
news.
You feel good and warm and fuzzy on the inside?
Just in
like
time
you
for
have
the
a
holidays.
Kitten on the inside.
Yeah.
And then there's Pets for Refugees. They subsidize the care for refugees to adopt pets and then bring them to the vet if they need to, and food. I mean, what a great holiday story. What a great Christmas story. Okay. But the shocking thing that I'm about to tell you is I got Chet to break the rules.
Yeah, we have
a rule
here.
What's our rule?
We don't talk about newer movies.
They got to be older than 92.
They've got to be at least older than 92. But actually, we've never even done anything newer than like about 1976. I think that's the newest movie we've ever talked about.
But we're going to talk about something that we find kind of troubling.
Yeah.
And
I mean, the reason we talk about these classic movies is because we keep running into people who say, "I don't like old movies. I don't like it. Is it in black and white? I can't watch it if it's in black and white."
Yeah.
Yeah. So we try to convert these people. We try to point out why you need to watch these old movies.
But there's lessons to be learned, history to be seen.
Yes, and art to appreciate. And we're talking, because it's a holiday season, we're talking about holiday movies. And people ask us, what are our favorite holiday movies? And we list off the classics that we're going to talk about on this podcast. But then there's another newer movie that we consider to be a classic. It's only 17 years old.
It is Elf.
Elf.
2003.
With Will Ferrell. And when we say this to people, we run into people who say,
"I don't like Will Ferrell. I don't care for his comedy.
I just don't laugh. I don't care
it's
for that sort of humor. It's just not my thing. It's just a little too broad for me.
The nose is up in the air.
I prefer something more sophisticated."
And
we have a message for people like that.
And what's the message?
Maybe you need to get over yourself a little
maybe
bit.
Maybe not be a little, not so uptight.
Yeah, maybe you need to loosen up a little bit. Maybe you need to come down to earth. Maybe you need to get off your high horse a little bit. Maybe you need to be a little more real, a little more genuine.
Off, Chet. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe there's a guy out there who could help you. Who could help you become a little more genuine, a little more real, a little less full of yourself.
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about. Oh, it's Buddy the Elf.
Buddy the Elf.
Played by Will Ferrell.
Buddy, yes. He's got a message for you. And I think if you watch this movie, and we're going to tell you why you should watch this movie, we think maybe you're going to get something out of Will Ferrell's humor. Particularly his elf humor.
His elf humor, which, okay, he's went in a little hard, but I would not say too hard on people who do not care for Will Ferrell's comedy.
Yeah.
But this movie is a... This is a safe Will Ferrell movie.
Oh, it's as safe
as it comes. If you don't care for his other movies, okay. It's a little bit like maybe you don't care.
It's heartwarming. It's innocent.
Yeah.
It's a PG movie. Well, let's talk about that, actually. When this movie is directed by Jon Favreau.
Not the Jon Favreau from Pod Save America.
No. The director, the guy who does, he's best known now for directing like the Avengers movies and Iron Man and all that kind of stuff. But he was approached with a script for this movie about an elf.
Yeah, I want to do a movie about an elf that is cynical and a PG-13 elf movie.
Yeah, a PG. If you can imagine.
So like a Chucky movie.
Yeah. Just imagine this pitch. Okay, yeah, there's this human being who's raised as an elf by Santa at the North Pole, but he finds out that he's actually a human and he goes to New York City, but it's kind of a dark tale. I think I would have turned down that script too. But Jon Favreau worked with it. And he lightened it up, and he made it into this warm and funny and very PG, very innocent, wonderful holiday movie.
Bob Newhart predicted, he foresaw.
That this was going to be a classic. Yes.
That this was going to be a perennial holiday movie.
Bob Newhart, who plays Papa Elf, the adopted father of Will Ferrell. In this movie, yeah.
And he plays it so straight. I mean, he doesn't break character, he doesn't laugh,
Straight. You're talking about one of the greatest straight men of all time, Bob Newhart.
Yeah.
Bob Newhart, the guy who was so good at playing the straight man. I mean, usually you got a comedy team. You got a funny guy, you got a crazy guy, and you got a straight man. You know, you got Jerry Lewis needed Dean Martin, you know, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello, you know, and Tom Smothers and his brother Dick. You know, you got a crazy guy and you got a straight guy. But Bob Newhart, all by himself,
good cop, bad cop,
is just the straight guy. In fact, he was so good at being just the straight guy, he had this bit that he would do with these in his stand-up comedy routine where he would do these one-sided telephone conversations where he would just speak into the phone and we never hear the person on the other line. We just guess what they were saying based on Bob Newhart's reactions to what the person was saying. So he's playing straight man to an imaginary funny man on the other side. He was so good at it, he became a big star, got a couple of great big hits out of situation comedies, the Bob Newhart Show from the 1970s, and then Newhart in the 1980s. And in these, he is the straight man surrounded by all these crazy characters. He is, in fact, the Jason Bateman of the 1970s and 80s. Statement. Yes.
And if you've seen Arrested Development, it's basically where Bob Newhart is Michael with the Bluth family.
Yeah.
That's what he's dealing with with his patients.
So that's Bob Newhart, a comedy icon, a wonderful comic actor, and yeah, he's Papa Elf in this, and yeah, he recognized that this was going to be a great movie from as soon as he started working
on it. He had faith in Will. So are you going to disagree with Bob Newhart?
No, I'm not.
No, I would not dare.
You don't want to cross Bob Newhart. Yeah, I also love Bob Newhart because he reminds me of my dad. Because he was born within a year of my dad, Midwestern guy. He kind of looks a little like my dad, very
like a
plain,
shorter version,
very ordinary, and he's just got this very just normal, straight, average Joe kind of demeanor to him. And my dad loved his show. The Bob Newhart Show is like my dad hardly ever watched anything on television, but he did make sure on Saturday night, CBS, when the Bob Newhart Show came on, he was sitting in front of the TV. That was like the only time all week. So
that's basically like saying that your dad would agree with Bob Newhart on this movie, but probably not. But we're going to go with it.
My father didn't live to see Elf, so I can't quite say that he would have loved this movie, but still.
But you almost didn't. You could have gone your whole life without seeing this movie.
I could have, yes. As we have made clear, I am a boomer.
And I'm a millennial.
And I kind of missed the first wave of Will Ferrell.
Only introduction, you missed him on SNL.
Yes. I mean, I watched Saturday Night Live when it started. I watched the very first episode of Saturday Night Live. But then by the time I got to college in the 1980s, I kind of quit watching TV. Then the show kind of went downhill. I didn't tune in.
It was because you didn't tune in.
Yeah, they needed my support. And Will Ferrell comes
for their
on.
Demise.
I don't even know who he is. Never heard of the guy. Didn't know the first thing about him.
Farrell.
Wasn't until somebody showed me years later.
A
copy of Anchorman. That was the first Will Ferrell movie ever. And I'm like, who is this guy? He's funny. He's a funny man. And then you introduced me when we were talking about holiday movies for the first time. You said Elf was your favorite Christmas movie.
You looked at me like I was crazy.
What is this Elf? Of which elf do you speak? I don't know. I know not this elf.
And now you are very familiar, and you have and buddy. You have a Santa, an elf hat. You have a.
I do. Elf, yeah.
Boxers, everything.
And I have.
You were a cotton-headed ninny muggins before you were introduced to this movie.
Yes, and I placed it in the canon. It is a classic. It is a classic of Christmas.
And you are not easy to have. Because I'm
a man of discerning tastes.
Yeah, I think you don't that's been add well established. New, like, no. So the mom in this movie, she's in a brand new holiday movie called Happiest Seasons on Hulu.
Yes, yes.
And we watched it. We enjoyed it.
Seen that movie.
We loved Daniel Levy.
We give it a thumb up.
But you're not going to add that to the
not
list.
Not a classic.
No.
Nowhere close to a classic. I mean, it's worth seeing.
Yes. And it's representation matters. And so it's, but Mary.
Yeah. You mentioned too, the other Christmas movie that you just.
Jingle Jangle on Netflix.
Yeah. Another movie.
That's a great musical, beautiful costumes.
I'll put my thumb up for that one.
Another representation for people of color and also.
Yeah. The kids will love that movie. The kids will
inspire people to want to get into that.
Yeah,
but you don't easily add stuff to it.
That's not going into my canon of classics. No,
no, but you should definitely see that once at least.
Yeah, you should.
But so, why does Elf get into the canon for you?
Well, I think I mean it starts with again Jon Favreau's decisions in how to tell the story, and one of the key decisions that he made. Now, again. As a boomer, I am very familiar with the old Christmas specials that came on TV, the Rankin-Bass Christmas specials beginning in 1964 with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there, though, because since I didn't have cable growing up, even though I was a millennial, I saw Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer every year on CBS.
Yeah, I think you can probably still see it. I'm just going to guess CBS is going to, or somebody's going to show it again this year.
I think I read something about how they were able to use, you're going to mention that they give a little bit of a wave to... A nod to, I mean,
an,
to
homage.
An homage to Rudolph here.
Yes.
I think they were able to do that because there was something about the rights for Rudolph nailed down, so they were able to do that.
Ah, I see, yeah.
So another thing with, like, It's a Wonderful Life, where they, for a while, nobody had the rights to it, so everybody could show it.
Uh-huh.
This must be something with Christmas movies.
Yeah, so somebody was asleep at the switch there, yeah.
Okay, well, tell us about the Rudolph.
But, yeah, well, the opening of the movie, they make, okay, the story is, Buddy is, he's not actually an elf, he's a human being, he was an orphan, and Santa goes to the orphanage, and Santa's delivering toys at the orphanage, and Buddy gets out of his crib, and he crawls into the sack, and Santa accidentally takes him back to the North Pole with him, opens the sack, what's this, a baby, I've got a baby here, well, he's going to stay here at the North Pole, and we're just going to raise him as one of our own, and he's going to, you know, believe that he's an elf, and Bob Newhart, Papa Elf, is childless, doesn't have any kids of his own, he adopts him, he's a wonderful father to him, and...
You know, this old cat house could use him as like a foster dad, probably.
Yeah.
He'd be great at that role.
Tenderhearted, but still straight-laced. Yes. Yeah. Anyway, so the day finally comes when, you know, Buddy figures out that, the design of the North Pole, Santa's workshop, the whole bit there, it's all an homage to the 1964 Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer special, the way the workshops, the architecture of the workshops, and there are little
the elf costumes kind of
very much the elf costumes come like straight out of that, and they actually have some stop animation characters.
They are adorable.
Yeah, these Christmas specials were, well, especially Rudolph, was stop animation, really difficult to make and had a very distinctive look to it, and they copied that, and they have some talking animals here. And when Buddy finally finds out that he is a human, and he has to, he just doesn't fit in at the North Pole, okay?
He tries his hardest. My goodness, he never gives up. He just keeps on plucking along, trying, because he wants to fit into this world that he's in.
He's just an earnest, sincere, hardworking guy who wants to make good.
The elves there recognize that, so they're never able to, they don't have the heart to tell him.
Yeah, which is different than, you know, we should mention, you know.
Rudolph is dreary and
yeah, the original Rudolph.
The misfit, the underdog, Rudolph, has to save Christmas in order for them to accept him.
Yeah.
If you're a misfit, that's not how this is supposed to work. You're not supposed to save the world in order to be accepted and seen as to have value and...
Yeah, no. And speaking of, let's just get it out on the table right now, okay? If we're talking about what is and is not a Christmas classic, I don't care. I do not care that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is almost as old as I am, and it's been seen a million times, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't care for it. Oh, I gosh. Don't care for it.
Here comes the hate mail.
Yeah. I mean, that, and most of these specials.
You're already learning from Buddy to be true to yourself.
Well, it's.
Say what you feel.
Yeah. And it's just a little too dark. And I didn't enjoy it as a child. I mean, I watched it. You're supposed to watch this stuff.
I mean, Rudolph is adorable.
Yeah. I mean, to me as a child, it was like a documentary about how Santa works.
Yeah.
But it was a bit disturbing.
Well, Santa, the dentist, the elf that wants to be a dentist, they ostracize him.
Yeah.
He gets kicked out and
the whole monster island? The island of
the misfit. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the toys didn't work. It's not the toys' fault that they were built. I mean, they built them that way. Who, you know, put them on an island? How cruel is that? And then you got a monster walking around and
abominable.
He's
got a toothache.
Yeah,
he's got a toothache. If somebody would just but they got it. These elves in the North Pole.
Yeah,
got
so
it.
For the Elf movie, they took the best parts. They took the good. They took the look of it. Okay, they took the whole fantasy of it. And when Buddy finally figures out that he's not actually an elf, I mean, it all. He's been wondering the whole time. I mean, you know, Will Ferrell is 6'3", weighs over 200 pounds, and he's having trouble fitting in with these people who like don't even come up to his waist, including his own father. But he hasn't quite put it all together. He hasn't put two and two together yet and figured out that he's, you know, what it is that's different about him. And he overhears one day one of the elves saying, you know, if he hasn't figured out by now that he's human, he never will. And then suddenly it's, oh, my God, it's like a Hitchcock moment when, he has the flashbacks and he realizes it all fits together. And no, I'm not actually an elf. And so he wants to go find his real father, and Santa points out to him that, yes, your real father lives in New York City. His name is Walter Hobbs, and he's this guy who he's a CEO of a company that publishes children's books.
Children's books. Oh, my gosh. He must be basically like a really adult version of Buddy.
No, he's not. He's on the naughty list.
No!
Yeah, he's on the naughty list
because
he just all he cares about is money. He's neglecting his other son that lives
turning
with him.
Turning a buck.
His family doesn't get his attention. Doesn't even care about making good books anymore. He just sent a book out the door, even though
he doesn't have the ending.
He's got two blank pages in it. And he said, "Ship it anyway. I don't want to, you know, have to pay for new ones."
That's
Anyway, that's his real father. But when Will Ferrell's got to go, and he says goodbye to the polar bear and the penguin and the cute little animals, and he's got to walk through he goes through the
candy cane. I pass through the seven levels of the candy cane forest, through the sea of swirly twirly gumdrops, and then I walked through the Lincoln Tunnel.
And yes, and they pick it up again where he's walking through the Lincoln Tunnel, and there he is in New York City. Okay, so this is where the movie gets so good. I mean, it was already good.
Yeah.
Okay, it was already good. But the key moment is, how are they going to wed together? The whole Santa thing, the reindeer and the elves and all that kind of stuff with the real world, okay? Usually you make a Christmas movie, it's either some kind of sweet little thing where somebody discovers the meaning of Christmas, but it's more of a metaphorical sort of thing. Or maybe you got like one angel in there, okay? Or you go completely fantasy and it's got Santa and the reindeer and all that, but you do that in animation, okay? It's a cartoon version of it, or it's the stop motion animation. But there aren't all that many movies that do both of them, We're going to show you Santa. We're going to have real Santa Claus, real reindeer, real elves, all that kind of stuff that's going to be 100% real. But we're also going to show you real people in the most real, gritty, cynical, hard-bitten, toughest town in the world, New York City. And that's where they send Buddy the Elf. And the merging of these two worlds is just fantastic. And, well, I'll let you tell how they actually filmed the first scene of Buddy in the city.
Well, they actually had Will Ferrell go out, and they had him shoot, and they got people's permission. They didn't have any cast members. They didn't. It no was extras. Just it was
didn't,
actual.
Didn't hire people. Yeah.
On the spot, what you see is what.
Yeah. So he's walking around,
running around New York City, and people are like, "Get away from me!"
Yeah, in his elf costume, complete with the yellow tights and the
6
green
6'3" guy walking around with tights, but it was tasteful.
Very tasteful.
He's got a tail.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we see him eating, even though Santa warned him that you're going to see some candy and that's not free candy.
Yeah.
He starts to eat some gum that's under some posts at the subway.
Stuck to the railing. Yeah, the hand railing. Yeah.
He goes spinning around a revolving door.
Yeah.
He's having a ball with that. Throws up once.
Uh-huh.
Does it again.
Yeah. He sees a guy on the street. And again, not an actor, not planned. There's some guy walking down the street, got a red sweatsuit on, complete with a hood, and he's got a big beard, and he runs up to him, and it's Santa. And no, it's not Santa, but, the guy plays along with it. I mean, just anyway.
And he discovers the world's best cup of coffee.
The world's best cup of coffee.
Congratulations.
Yeah, because he believes everything that he sees. He is childlike. He is innocent. He is gullible. He is believable. He has faith in all the things. Because if you come from the North Pole and you know the real Santa Claus, of course you're going to believe in magical stuff. You're going to believe anything that anybody tells you, right? So this is Buddy. And he gets to New York City and he meets his father. And his father, of course,
thinks it's a joke. Somebody's pranking him.
Yeah. And then he thinks he's crazy, and then they throw him out of the office, and they say, go back to Gimbel's, because they assume that he's an employee from Gimbel's department store. So he goes to Gimbel's, of course, and the people at Gimbel's think he's an employee at Gimbel's department store, and they just, put him to work. And of course,
Santa's coming the next day!
They gotta be ready for him!
And they're not ready.
So, of course, he stays up all night and puts together
he's got no place to go.
And he's got these special skills. I have a set of very special, very specific skills.
Yes, if you're in quarantine, you want Buddy to come to your house to make it a winter wonderland.
Yeah, and so
you hire him for that.
He does the place up, right? Okay.
That's his future.
Yeah. And he also meets the cute little
Jovi
employee, who's also dressed up like an elf, who's played by
Zoe Deschanel.
Yeah, and he immediately develops a crush on her, and of course, he has to tell her. I mean, well, he's nervous. He can't quite express himself around her. That's about the only time that he can't actually come right out and say what he thinks. Anyway,
that's true. Yeah.
So then finally, he goes back and tries to see his father again, and finally he shows her this picture of his actual biological mother that they gave him at the orphanage, and of course Walter recognizes that, and he's like, "Oh, what's going on here? Who is this crazy guy? Why is he?"
Walter didn't know that Buddy existed. He didn't know there was a baby.
Yeah, so he goes. They get a DNA test, and it finds out, "Whoa, holy crap! This really is my son." And he obviously thinks he's got some sort of disorder, and so the doctor, who's actually a cameo by Jon Favreau, the director, he says, "Well, you need to take him home. He's suffering some sort of delusion, and he needs love and acceptance and all this kind of stuff. And he'll probably snap out of this once his life becomes stabilized or whatever." So he takes him home. Meets his wife, the
Emily,
the lovely, gracious Mary Steenburgen, who is so kind and so caring and so tries so hard to be accepting of Buddy. And even when she, she feeds him the spaghetti and he pours the maple syrup on it because
That's one of the four main food groups.
Yes, yes.
For elves, they stick to the four main food groups, candy canes, candy corn, and syrup.
Yes. And she even, you know, the next morning he makes some for her, and she even, like a
Well, he's so sweet. He's sweet to think of them to try to make, let me make you some breakfast. And they're like, did you sleep last night? And he's like, he's got like, what? 30 minutes of sleep or something.
That's all like, elves sleep. That's all he needed. So, anyway. This is...
Everything he touches becomes beautiful because, I mean, he decorates their house, too. He's like, there needs to be some lightness in here. There needs to be something cheerful.
Well, he even breaks apart the furniture to make a little wooden rocking horse.
Because Walter needs a rocking horse.
Well, yeah, of course.
A buck on a horse, you can... knock some sense into you.
And so then he meets his half-brother, and his half-brother thinks he's weird.
Yeah, Michael treats him like another, like the age that Buddy kind of seems to be at mentally.
Yeah, yeah. But then Buddy wins him over through the big snowball fight, because, you know, who's better at snowball fights? And an elf who's lived at the North Pole his whole life. So then he bonds with his brother, and, okay, anyway, so... We don't want to give away the whole movie, but...
No, but his brother has been ignored by his dad, and so even though Buddy becomes a brother, he also kind of becomes like a father figure.
Yeah, and his best friend. I mean, and
he's never been shown this much kindness from an adult other than his mom, probably.
Yeah. So, anyway, this is...
Everybody's life gets better.
And this is part of what... Okay, let's get back to when people say they don't like Will Ferrell movies... Will Ferrell, we're not going to claim that every single movie that Will Ferrell has ever made. Oh, and by the way, this was one of his first movies. He isn't like box office gold. Nobody knows for sure that this is even going to be a big hit. Because,
except for Bob Newhart.
Yeah, except for Bob Newhart. Okay. But the thing of it is, this is a classic Will Ferrell character, but yet it is... Probably, if you're not a fan of Will Ferrell, it's going to be the one that you're going to like the most, okay?
That's as close as you could get.
Yeah, and Will Ferrell he's great at playing these characters. When he was on Saturday Night Live, he had this character that he would do, that the guy who could not modulate his voice, everything he said was spoken at the same... Okay, that was the whole bit, okay?
But he was self-aware that he couldn't modulate his voice.
Yes. It's not my favorite Will Ferrell character by any stretch of the imagination, but it's really insightful as to the kind of character that Will Ferrell plays. He is always creating these characters who cannot modulate something. And this is the whole point. So much of humor is when we poke fun at all of these conventions. In order to be a grown-up, to live in the society, you have to follow these certain rules. You have to put these filters on yourself. You're not supposed to say too much. You're not supposed to... And especially, again, if you're a person who lives in New York City, surrounded by millions of people walking down the street with you, you don't pay attention to anybody else. You don't talk about what you're feeling. You don't express warmth and emotion. You don't express wonderment or surprise or any of those sorts of things. And as adult, we're supposed to bottle all that stuff up. And we can become polite... And we can do things that are socially acceptable by not revealing too much about ourselves and not expressing too much, but that doesn't make us nice people. And Will Ferrell...
He's suggesting some of those filters aren't helpful.
That's right. And so much of comedy is somebody who decides to just switch off one of those filters. And, like, I mean, the first jokes that you ever make as a kid is when you're together with, you know, one of your friends and you decide to say something inappropriate in public. Or, you know, your friend has a crush on somebody, so you say their name out loud. Or you're somewhere in a quiet place and somebody makes a fart sound or whatever. You're just playing with these rules about these social conventions. And Will Ferrell does this all the time. And so many of his characters are like this. They're the people who just can't shut up. They can't quit talking. Like when he's Ron Burgundy in The Anchorman, it's like, oh, you know, he'll read anything that's on the teleprompter.
Anything?
Anything. And of course, it ruins his career because he does.
But so this is the most innocent character
Will
ever plays. And it's not just for laughs. And Yeah, like you were saying. I mean, we try too hard to be grown-ups.
Yeah, and this character, the thing that he can't modulate...
What is he trying to not cover up?
Well, it's his childlike innocence. And it's different than, like, if you see Step Brothers, what he can't modulate is, like, this juvenile behavior. He's like a junior high kid, okay? And so the humor is junior high-ish, and it's this awkward and insecure stuff and all this kind of stuff. But here, he is genuinely childlike. And he expresses wonderment and surprise.
Excitement, love.
And joy and love.
Love for other people.
Yeah, and when he sees his father, he doesn't even know his father, but immediately he wants to say...
You know, he knows his father's on the naughty list, and he wants to
help him. Yeah, and he tells him that he loves him. And he wants to love his brother, and he meets he compliments all these people that he meets.
Deb,
and
the secretary Deb, or the...
Oh, you're so pretty, you know. And,
oh, I love your hair.
Yeah.
And she loves, you know, she is... just can't believe he's complimenting her. She loves it. She wants to be his friend.
And he's just, he's so excited about everything. He doesn't hold anything back. And isn't that kind of what we're supposed to be like during the holidays?
Christmas is for children.
But aren't we all children at Christmas time? Yes. Mm-hmm. That's what we're supposed to feel. That's what we're supposed to remember, especially this time of the year. We don't hold back.
No.
You don't keep that love bottled up inside.
You don't be uptight.
You let that joy out.
You let it, that inner child, out.
You shower the people you love with love.
You bring out the best in them. You live
Show
life
them
to the fullest.
The way that you feel. Yeah. So that's what Buddy is. And eventually, I mean, he tries with his father and, okay. The riskiest move that they make in this movie.
Mm.
Okay.
With Peter Dinklage.
Peter Dinklage. Oh, tell us.
Game of Thrones. Peter, you'll recognize him from Game of Thrones. Tyrion Lannister. He plays Miles Finch.
Yeah. And if you haven't seen Game of Thrones, Peter Dinklage has dwarfism. He's, you know, very, very short. Like, you know, I don't know.
4 foot, like 5 or something like that.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so... Okay, now just imagine this. You're in the story. You're pitching the story idea to somebody, and you say, "Well, we've got the story about it. It's about a guy who thought he was an elf, and he comes into New York City, and because he figures out he's a human being, but he's lived his whole life with elves who are these little people. Wouldn't it be great if that we had like somebody with dwarfism in the film?"
And if the Miles Finch character was going to be an elf, Peter Dinklage would turn it down. He didn't He turned down Leprechaun and elf roles. He's
Of course.
Did not like that.
Yes. Yeah, so you decide that you're going to put somebody like that in this film, and immediately it's like, oh, that could be in poor taste. That really could be in poor
Having
taste.
Having elf buddy
meet. But then you say, no, listen. Listen, this is the way we're going to go. It's not like, you know, he's this, you know, this poor lonely guy and Buddy's going to befriend him and it's going to be this warm moment or no. No, that's not the way we're playing it. Miles Finch, the character that Dinklage plays, is this world famous author of children's books. But he's also just a supreme jerk. He's incredibly arrogant. He's aggressive. He is condescending. I mean, somebody who's, you know, 4 foot tall, who is condescending, that's kind of funny. And so they call him in, actually, because they have to save the company because that last book was ruined and they're going to, you know, lose a whole bunch of money if they don't.
They have to do a pitch on Christmas Eve because, of course, business.
Yeah.
People don't.
You can't stop
care about
Christmas
Eve.
Yeah. That's, you know, the quarter's going to end at the end of the year and you got to show a profit. So you got to come up with new story ideas. So they call him in and he's giving them, they're going to pay him huge bucks to give him some story ideas. And he's in there in the conference room. And of course, who comes in but Buddy?
Because Buddy doesn't have a filter. He can't contain his love for Jovi. They just had their cute
Their first little date, yes.
I'm in love and I don't care who knows it.
Yes. And so he comes in and he has never seen, other than the elves at the North Pole, he has never seen, you know, a little person before. And so he immediately mistakes him for an elf. And Miles Finch is not at all amused. Okay, so here's the rest of the pitch. No, there's going to be some conflict between, but is it going to be an ugly moment? Well, it's going to go beyond ugly because Miles Finch is just going to throw Buddy all around the conference room. He is just going to beat the crap out of this 6'3", 30-year-old man, and it turns out to be...
Well, he's an angry
elf. Yeah. it's actually one of the funnier moments of the film. And again, it's just that's one of those that just kind of skates on the edge, but it works because of its Buddy's innocence that causes the whole scenario there. And Buddy just doesn't know any better.
Well, because you have... Sorry, finish your thought there.
Well, I'm just saying, and the real world is going to throw Buddy all around the room. I mean, metaphorically speaking, he's...
Well, everybody's eyes in the boardroom are like...
Yeah. And this is when, his dad tells him to get out. He doesn't ever want to see him again. Oh, which leads to...
Another nod to a classic movie, Christmas movie, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
Buddy is, he doesn't fit in the elf world. He doesn't fit in this world. He doesn't fit in anywhere, he tells himself.
Yeah.
And so he puts on his elf costume because he changed into his dad's clothes to try to make to please his dad.
Yeah.
And...
we didn't even mention who plays his father.
James Caan.
Oh, come on. James Caan.
So this is another reason why we thought this was okay to do this movie, because our first podcast is Brian's Song, so this is a whole, stars James Caan. This is a whole full circle moment. So James Caan plays his father.
Yeah.
And, he's embarrassed by Buddy, so he wants him to wear clothes other than tights.
Speaking of James Caan, and the difference between James Caan and Bob Newhart.
Yeah, what's the difference?
Yeah. James Caan, they're making this movie, and James Caan is thinking, gee, this Will Ferrell guy, isn't he a little, isn't this kind of over the top, you know? I don't think this
is working. He sounds a little bit like Walter Hobbs.
Yeah.
Where it's a little too much for him.
Yeah. Like
kind of like people who don't like Will Ferrell.
Yeah. Maybe you need to get over yourself, James Caan. Yeah. And then, eventually he does figure out, oh, this is quite funny. James Caan doesn't do a whole lot of comedy. I mean, he's mostly known for...
The Godfather. Sonny Corleone.
Sonny. And,
He was in Funny Lady, which is the sequel to Funny Girl.
Yeah. Oh.
So he starred opposite Barbara Streisand.
Speaking of sequels.
Elf was... There was lots of talk about Elf being a sequel because it's such a success.
Yeah.
And we know that Will Ferrell has done Anchorman 2. He's done... Daddy's Home. There are two of those, but Elf. That's a no.
Didn't do it.
That's a no for him. Will says that it's because you probably don't want to see a middle-aged man walking around in tights. Yeah. But James Caan has the inside scoop.
Yeah, he said at least in one interview, he said Will Ferrell and Jon Favreau just didn't get along.
And James Caan was disappointed because he said he was really hoping to have a series. So he could
wanted to hook up to the old gravy train there. Yeah. So anyway,
Buddy's on a bridge. He's hit rock bottom. He feels like I've tried to help all of these people, and what was it for?
Yeah.
Nobody wants me. Nobody accepts me.
Yeah.
And so he's on the bridge, and then Clarence. But it's Santa Claus falls out of the sky.
Yeah.
And he instantly kicks into, I got to go help Santa.
Yeah, because Santa, it turns
out. There's no Christmas spirit.
Right. And the sleigh. Santa's sleigh, I didn't know this before, it runs.
I didn't either.
On Christmas spirit.
I thought it ran on coal.
That's the magic that makes the sleigh fly. Yeah. And Christmas spirit has been waning over the decades. Not as many people believe in Santa Claus anymore. So the spirit is down. So the energy for the sleigh is down.
Lower than Trump's approval rating.
So, but another political joke?
Oh, I thought that was kind of funny, though. But
I mean, with the politics, I mean.
I know, but that was good.
We're going to offend listeners.
No, it wasn't anything. I was just.
Well, okay.
It's just an
objective reality.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so
isn't that better? Because I'm saying it's lower.
Right.
That's lower. That's got to make him feel better that something is lower.
That's a good point. Rating. No. When you put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. So it can't fly.
Right.
It crashes into Central Park.
Right. There is an engine. Okay. There is an engine.
Thanks
okay.
to Papa Elf.
Yeah, Papa Elf, Bob Newhart's character, he did design a jet propulsion engine for the sleigh to make up for the lack of Christmas
like
spirit.
Something 3,000? Yeah.
Yeah. But it, you know, it came loose. It's, you know, it fell off. And luckily, Buddy is there to
and Buddy knows how to do it.
He knows how to repair that engine because, you know, he studied at the hand of Papa Elf. So anyway, we'll...
And what does Santa say to him?
What does he say
to him? Well, Buddy's like, no, I can't do this. And I'm not an elf. What does Santa say to Buddy?
What does Santa say to him?
He says, you've got more... He's like, you're more of an elf than anybody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Something like that. Something about being elfish.
He gives him a very... Well, no, it's like he's got more spirit. You got more elf in your pinky, basically, than anybody else.
Yeah. Oh, we should mention who plays Santa, too.
Yeah, tell me, Ed Asner?
Ed Asner, another... I mean, okay, we're talking about Bob Newhart being... just at the peak of his career, well, started in the 1970s, at the same time that the Bob Newhart show is on, the Mary Tyler Moore show is on right before it on CBS on Saturday nights. And Ed Asner wins several Emmys for the character he created for that show called Lou Grant, the rough, rough but benign editor of the news station where Mary Tyler Moore has her job. And then they spun that show off, and he got his own show as Lou Grant, which is more of a dramatic show, and he won a bunch of awards for that one, too.
Good for
Ed. So he's been around for a long time, and he does a really nice Santa, too.
Yeah, because he's a cute Santa.
He's not just
jolly. You don't want somebody jolly.
No. There's a little bit of Lou Grant in this Santa Claus, okay? He's not, I mean, not as rough as Lou Grant, but there's a little bit of a... there's kind of a gruff quality.
Well, he's kind of a slave driver. You know, he comes home when he delivers the presents at the beginning of the movie, and then he's like, and now we're going to do start on the presents for next year.
That's right. Yeah. So anyway, he gives him a pep talk as only Lou Grant / Santa Claus can do. And we'll leave it there. We won't give away the ending of the film, but, anyway, so this is...
The best way to spread Christmas cheer.
Yeah. Well, we should say that it is singing loud for all to hear, which is
another talent from Will that he can sing.
Yeah.
So, how many comedians can have this kind of humor?
And, you know, until we were researching this, I didn't realize his father was a professional musician.
Yeah, so if you actually are a fan of Will Ferrell, and obviously there are quite a few fans for him to have so many movies. Somebody's got to watch them other than us. And his dad was a member of the Righteous Brothers.
Yeah, or at least was did the keyboards for the song. Saxophone, keyboards, organ. So
Will almost didn't become an actor because of it.
Yeah, he didn't.
He didn't. He wanted a steady income.
Right. We should say something about Will Ferrell too. I mean, the more you hear about, the more you learn about Will Ferrell, the more you like the guy.
Yeah. So
It
starts 1967, California. That's when he's born. Yep.
Really? He's that old? I didn't know he was that old.
I believe so. Uh-oh.
Okay. Oh, well, anyway.
Sorry if I made you older, Will, but
Sorry. Well, who cares? Will's not going to care because you know what? Will Ferrell has a reputation as being like the nicest guy in Hollywood.
Probably doesn't care for people pining over him.
Probably.
So.
Yeah. But anyway.
1967 is when
really?
He was born.
Really? He is that old? Okay. Mm-hmm. He's almost a boomer. I mean, he's just like a couple years short of being a boomer. Yeah. So, but nice guy, a really smart guy.
He went to USC.
Went to USC. He was going to...
Not that we're saying that makes him a smart guy, but he graduated with a BA.
Yeah, and he was going to be a sportscaster. He got a degree in sports information and just, you know...
What didn't have the heart.
Didn't love it. Didn't have the drive for it. And but the one thing he never was a stand-up comic. He does not do stand-up comedy, and it's partly because... he said that would be a really scary job, and people can be really mean to stand-up comics, and he's not he's not this just incredibly arrogant, self-assured guy. He only likes to do his comedy in character. He doesn't even like to do too many straight interviews. Usually when he's on somebody's show, he's clowning around. He doesn't just sit there and talk about himself. And part of that is because he's a really boring guy too. He is not one of these, you know, troubled souls. A lot of guys that go into comedy are, you know, have substance abuse problems, mm-hmm. or they were neglected, or they dropped out of high school and, you know, spent time on the road and learned their hard lessons that way. No, he had a very stable home life for the most part. He lived in the suburbs. He describes himself as being this really boring, down-to-earth guy, and he's just...
He played sports, yeah, and one of the other reasons we like Will Ferrell and this movie is you got the underdog.
Yeah.
You got a misfit,
mm-hmm.
okay? But also, he did some of his comedy when he was a kid because it wasn't because he had to overcome stuff to maybe lighten things up. It was, you know, he was bored.
Yeah, he was just bored. And so, he's a creative kid who's just,
so we, you know, kind of relate to where sometimes we would do some of our humor and it wouldn't be to where it would be necessarily in poor taste or a bad timing or in the wrong place. And people would be kind of too, like the
people
characters.
People are just a little too uptight. Yeah.
It's, you got to lighten up a little bit.
Life doesn't have to be so serious. Yes.
You can get good ideas from some improv and it's good for you to.
Don't stifle those people.
Have some imagination.
Don't crush the life out of them. Yeah, don't drive the joy out of them.
This is a PSA. Yeah. If somebody is trying to lighten up a high school because, I don't know, either you're trying to act like they need to be adults.
Yeah.
But then you're not giving them any guidance as to what you're wanting from them. And so they have to,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah,
put on a little bit of a show and then also to try to be maybe accepted by their peers or something.
Yeah. We learn these things when you learn how to function as adult and be accepted in the grown-up world. It is true. You do have to learn to modulate your emotions. You can't, you know, shoot your mouth off all the time. You have to learn when to speak and when to listen and all that kind of stuff. And that's all true. But it's really easy to overlearn those lessons. And it's really easy to forget that you're still a genuine human being underneath it all. And some people get so good at performing the socially acceptable behavior that they forget the real human being that's underneath, and they can never bring it out again. And that's one of the reasons some people struggle with their relationships. It's when you are trying to relate to other people, sometimes you have to be genuine. Sometimes you have to reveal things. If you want to make friends, form relationships, you have to eventually self-disclose. You have to tell people, open up a little bit, make yourself vulnerable. And a lot of people just forget to do that. It's too risky for them. And we need buddies. To remind us that there's a balance that we have to strike. Yes, we have to learn a few things to fit in, so we can't be disruptive. Yes, that's part of being a grown-up, but that doesn't mean you have to be phony. There should still be a real human being underneath there. And the love and the joy and the wonder that we feel, that needs to come out.
And one of my favorite scenes is when he's on his date with Jovi, and they have that we talked in private about. We liked the music that they chose.
Oh yeah, great soundtrack.
And so you got Frank Sinatra's "You Make Me Feel So Young."
Yes.
And oh my goodness, I mean, he's so earnest on their date and just finds joy in just boring things, maybe, right? But no, he makes it fun. He shows her the revolving door. Best cup of coffee. He puts a blindfold on her. And
the world's greatest cup of coffee. Yes, yes.
And she says it tastes like a crappy cup of coffee. Sees it? That's a crappy... No, it's not.
Yeah.
Anyway, isn't that what you kind of want with your life partner, too? Somebody that makes even just mundane things seem like great discoveries?
Yeah, the world's
an oyster.
It's a wonderful place, really, if you look for it, if you can set your filter to see the things that are good in the world. There's
He's admiring a tree, and then she's like, oh, I know what he's really going to love. and they're in New York City, so you got to go to the Rockefeller.
Yeah, the Rockefeller Center. Yeah, it's the biggest humongous tree. Yeah.
And also, we find out that she can sing.
Yes.
And so when they were doing the casting for this movie, Zooey Deschanel was not in the running for it. So I don't know who else was considered, but they couldn't do it. So she gets the part, but they were going to do it for the character of Jovi. Whatever talent that actress had, or actor, excuse me, they were going to model it. They were going to go around that. Mm-hmm. And so she can sing. And
very good singer.
Very good singer. Mm-hmm. And she's very shy in this movie, the character is, about singing. But she's got to help Buddy.
Yeah.
And so she starts singing, "He sees you," you know.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, she finds her courage to sing in front of other people. Yeah.
And then they all sing together. So it's kind of like it's a wonderful life when everybody gives money to help save that situation, that crisis. But
so it's, yeah, this movie, it's... It's not just hilarious. This is probably the funniest Christmas movie that's ever been made. And, you know,
that's we enjoy Home Alone, and
yeah, I mean, that's a subjective, opinion, but still,
How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Oh yeah, the animated,
the
version.
Animated, the but original. In the '60s. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Boris Karloff.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, so there's
And we love A Christmas Story, which, if you also A Christmas Story, we got Ming Ming, who is little Ralphie.
Yeah, a little Easter egg in your Christmas movie.
Yes, so Peter Billingsley plays Ming Ming. He's unaccredited, or uncredited. But he's probably accredited, who knows? He probably went to school.
Yeah.
But, so he's the, head elf that doesn't have the heart. He's in charge of...
Yeah.
Giving elves their duties, and he doesn't have the heart to tell Buddy, "You really suck at your job."
So look for him. He's still got blonde hair.
And he's still got his cute little ears. And
he's still got a cute face.
Well, speaking of actors that don't get enough attention, maybe talk about the Gimbel's manager that you love so much.
I'm actually disappointed. The guy's name is Fizo Love. And he's a stand-up comic, apparently. I look him up on IMDb, and he doesn't have that many credits, but he's really wonderful as the store manager, the guy who's he's a little paranoid. He's trying to make big here. The costume is great. They put him in a little sweater vest. He's a large man, okay? They put him in a sweater vest, and his pants are just a little too short, and he's wearing white socks, and it's just the perfect look for him, and he's really kind of he's really nervous after Buddy makes the store look great. It's like, oh, it's a little too good. You know, somebody from corporate came in to do this. Anyway,
we got to stick together.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing of it is, there really aren't any super villains in this. I mean, even Walter Hobbs, the father, even though he's lost his way, he's not a terrible person. The manager at Gimbel's, even though he's kind of a taskmaster with his employees.
We know if anybody's in retail, it's a horrible job. Yeah, customers are terrible. You get people at turnover rate. Yeah. I can't even imagine doing scheduling for... No.
Yeah.
Wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
So you feel sorry for that guy. And at first, the chemistry between him and his half-brother isn't really good. And his half-brother is kind of like, oh, you know, you're crazy, you're lame or whatever. But then he wins him over. And it turns out that his brother's a really good kid that just, you know, he just needed a little bit of support. And this relationship that he has with Buddy, I mean, he just has this way of, it's like everybody is just rotated a little bit off center. They're just not focused on quite the right things, and Buddy comes into their orbit, and they just they see what they're supposed to see.
You know the whole saying, like, if you see, like, you never know, like, what a smile can do. Like, if you smile at a stranger, you don't know what kind of day they're having.
I'm not familiar.
Okay, maybe
with
not
the
a saying,
saying
it's not. But it's
smile,
you're kind of, well,
and
it's,
the world smiles with you.
Okay,
smile though your heart is breaking.
Segment brought to you by Smile.
Yes. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Well,
please continue.
I mean, it's just kind of, it's another lesson of, say, your talents might not be to be turning a buck by going to do a corporate job. Yeah. Or, but you do have something to offer. If you just try to bring out, you see the good in other people.
Yeah.
You can just giving that to them. That's an amazing purpose to have.
Yeah. Well, and it's
that's not nothing.
It's a limitless resource too. The world is full of people, and all of them can, nobody's perfect, but everybody can be a little better than they are.
And we're all guilty of getting so caught up and forgetting to act a little bit, like have that little inner child where you see good in life and not be so cynical. And
the really cool thing about human beings is that they respond to love and encouragement, and they see somebody else who's willing to be genuine and open and comfortable in who they are, and just and to embrace them and be supportive of them. Everybody just, you can't help but feel better. And like I said,
everybody needs a buddy. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The world is full of people who could all benefit from just a little bit. And if you can't do it, by golly, at this time of the year, isn't that what the holidays are all about?
That's what it's
all. Yeah, it is. So.
But you know, you know what? Also, we need to start adding. We need to talk about Buddy's diet.
Oh yeah.
Because maybe the secret is that we're not eating right.
That could be.
What we need is more sweetness in us.
Yeah.
And okay, so, Chet, you love pancakes. Okay,
I do.
Tell the people what kind of syrup you were putting on your pancakes before we moved to New York.
Yeah, I was just putting your basic generic store brand knockoff of the log cabin knockoff, which is a knockoff of genuine maple syrup.
And then what changed your life?
My life was changed by real maple syrup.
Okay, and then also I'm going to make the case for Buddy putting maple syrup in everything and on everything. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you like to try new different recipes, healthy recipes, you're going to know that when a recipe calls for honey or, say, agave, which is a substitute like that vegans like to use instead of honey as a sweetener, but both honey and agave spike your glucose. So usually people who try to give you healthier recipes, they say, no, you sub maple syrup. It's a natural sweetener. Mm-hmm. That's what you sub. So I think actually that whole joke there, sure, maybe don't do Pop-Tarts and marshmallows and M&Ms and all that.
And maybe not with spaghetti.
Maybe not with spaghetti. But no,
the maple syrup is
the key to maybe having a little bit of Buddy in you because it's sweet.
All of us should carry a little bottle in our sleeve, just as Buddy does. Yes.
Yeah.
And the cool thing, of course, now that we live in upstate New York, is everybody...
Maple syrup's everywhere.
Yeah, everybody's got a maple tree in their yard, and you just tap into that, and you can get your own maple syrup right there. I mean, I didn't know that until I grew up in, you know, the Great Plains in the Midwest, as did you.
Well, there's a lot of trees there.
Yeah.
Arbor Day started there.
Right. But no, you can't just tap a tree in Nebraska and get maple syrup out of it the way you can here in upstate New York.
Mm-mm. No, but I think that's the key.
Yeah. Okay, so I think if we haven't convinced you yet to watch Elf, then there's no hope for you.
I mean, that's not the Buddy thing to say, but, you know, Buddy doesn't have the heart to say it to you.
All right, well, let's put it this way.
What would Buddy say?
If we haven't convinced you that you will like this movie, you know, just try the first 5 minutes of it, okay? And let Buddy himself try to convince you. See if you can say no to Buddy, the real Buddy. We don't think you can.
No. And if you can, we'll give you your money back.
Yeah, we'll give you your money back. Yeah, just send a self-addressed stamped envelope to the show, and we will give you a full refund for every penny that you spent to listen to this.
But you'll also be on the naughty list.
Yes, you will.
So that's on your conscience.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
All right, well, boy, we've still got more holiday movies.
We've got two more podcasts for holidays. Yeah, we're
trying to get two more in before Christmas, and we're going to try to cover three movies in that time, and we'll try to keep ourselves hyped up on sugar so we can get through it.
All right, thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye.